Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Rochelle Stiebler from Boston, Massachusetts. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 5th, 2012, episode 438. This episode is brought to you by Back on Track. Good morning, Horse World.
Good morning.
It's Thursday.
Kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Well, good morning, everybody. We're here the day after the 4th of July, and I hope everybody survived the fireworks last night. All your animals, your doggies, and your horsies all survived the noise. I know we had to put our thunder shirt on our dog last night, who was not liking the fireworks going off in the neighborhood at all. But Jamie will be back tomorrow. She had some things she had to deal with today. And we'll talk a little bit more about that and hopefully fill you in a little bit on what's going on. So we're welcoming our friend Rochelle to the show, who we've talked to before, but it's usually been from Slovakia. But you're not in Slovakia right now, are you, Rochelle?
No, I'm here in sunny Massachusetts. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning. Thank you so much for filling in on such short notice for Jamie today. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
Now, you're back. We've talked to you before because you're our adopted vet student, and you're going to vet school in, of all places, Slovakia, which we all had to look up on the map because we had no idea where it was. But now you're back for the summer. Is that the deal?
Yeah, back for the summer. I return in September, probably the first week of September. So I'm back trying to earn some money for pay the tuition for next semester. And try and have some fun, see my friends.
So no good-looking Slovakian guy swept you off your feet and kept you there for the summer?
Well, he might have tried, but I was too busy with my head in a book.
Well, we'll talk more about that in a minute, too. But first, let's find out what's on today's show from Jennifer.
On today's Thoroughly Therapeutic Thursday edition, our guest host, Rochelle, fresh from an educational expedition to Slovakia, will entertain us throughout the show with plenty of amazing adventure stories of the veterinary variety, No Pressure Rochelle. In between plenty of horsey headlines, and then to wrap up the day, a round of Olympic trivia to challenge everyone's craniums. And to all the folks out there who get in trouble with their families for working too much, Happy Workaholics Day.
Is it really Happy Workaholics Day today?
According to Wacky and Crazy Holidays, it is.
Well, I don't want to be a workaholic, so let's just cut the show short and call it a day.
Okay, I'm good. Go back to
Jennifer,
bed.
Is the chat? Exactly. Is the chat room open?
Just about.
Okay,
now it's open.
Okay, so Jennifer's opening up the chat room. You can go over to blogtalkradio.com and click on Horses in the Morning link and go to the chat room there. You know, Rochelle, it is, I don't know what it is. All day yesterday, because Jennifer and I took the day off too, all day yesterday, I kept thinking it was Saturday, and then you have to come back on Thursday. It's almost harder to have a day off in the middle of the week.
It is. I actually thought the same. I thought it was Sunday yesterday. So, yeah, I'm a little out of whack as well.
Yeah, it's just tough when you have that day off. Now, I'm not complaining. It was a nice day off. We had a lovely day, and we had a good time. But Thursday morning just seems harder than Monday morning usually is. I don't know. Maybe it's because you drink on the July 4th usually. And, you know, and in this case it was on a Wednesday. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
It's a mental battle, too. You know, you're prepared for Monday. You know it's going to be hard. You mentally psych yourself up for it. But you can't psych yourself up for a Thursday. It's kind of an odd day.
That's true. We had this discussion before. Thursday's like the non-day. It's like the day shouldn't even exist. We could just skip Thursday and go right to Friday, and nobody would care.
Yep.
Except for all those people born on a Thursday. They might care. But, the rest of us would be like, Friday, it's fine. Let's just move it along. Speaking of which, here's your daily Winnie.
So I would like to give a shout out to all those grooms and workers that are out there that are working hard in this heat. Even though the boss might not seem like they appreciate you, those horses do. So good job to everybody that's working outdoors today, working with horses.
Well, you know, Rochelle, we're going to talk a little bit about that later on in the show, too. Was a professional groom and traveled the world doing that. So we're going to talk to her a little bit about what it's like for all of the Olympic grooms right now heading out and what they're going through, getting ready, getting all the stuff ready for their bosses and their horses and heading over to Europe. And she'll give us a little bit of a flavor of what that's like and what they're going through. And I have a couple of daily Winnies today. First, a big thank you to all the listeners who voted for Jamie in the Horse Nation Helmet Contest. We really appreciate all of your votes. And what happened is Jamie actually came in second to a girl who must have gotten the troops out to vote for and did very well. But what they did is 1K, who was giving away the helmets, instead of giving away one of the patriotic helmets, decided to give away five to the top five. So Melissa Parnia came in first with the most votes, and then Jamie was in second. So Jamie gets the helmet as well. Maggie Hitron John Mason were the ones who painted their horses like the flag, their horse like the flag. So that was a cool one. They won one. Danielle Shimota won also, and Danielle Moritz also won. So congratulations to all five of them, and thank you very much for getting the votes out for Jamie. I know she appreciates it, and she would be giving you the Daily Winnie if she was here today. So we appreciate that. My second Daily Winnie. My second Daily Winnie goes out to Kathy Judge, who posted on our Facebook page and asked a question, and we're hoping we can help her here. She said, do you guys know of any suppliers of solar fans to be used for run-in sheds? The heat is on this summer. You know, that's a good – Rochelle, I've never thought about that, but, you know, that's an interesting point because most run-in sheds, you're not going to get power out to them.
That is a great idea.
Do you know of any? Jennifer, do you have any thoughts?
I did a spot of surfing this morning, and by golly, a company called FarmTech, which I am familiar with from using them in the past to buy products, they make all kinds of stuff for any agricultural use, do have several solar-powered fan kits that are made specifically for agricultural use. So you just hit them up, FarmTech.
Huh. Are they expensive, like thousands of dollars, or?
Well, that's what I assumed, because solar arrays can be very expensive, but I was rather surprised to see that they're in the $200 to $300 range. And it seems to be the whole kit in that the solar array, the collecting device, and the fan all come together, as far as I can tell. So FarmTech, if you're listening, can you, like, call us and fill us in on this?
Yeah, and also post on Facebook. Ask if anybody's ever used one and if they have one they can recommend. For Kathy. We appreciate you listening, Kathy, and we'll do what we can to find an answer there. It would have to go through, there would have to be batteries involved, because all of these things don't work directly, usually. The solar array goes into a battery pack, and then that is what would run the fan. I don't know how long your batteries would last with a fan running on it. I don't know how much juice a fan motor takes. But it is an interesting idea, especially with it being so hot this summer everywhere. Now, in Slovakia, is it summer there now or is it winter there now?
Oh, it's beautiful summer there right now. It's very, very hot. It's not quite as hot as it is here, but it's certainly up there. It's toasty.
It does get hot? Does it get really, really cold in the winter then?
It does. It's to be honest, I've only been there 1 year, not even a full year, just those 10 months, but I've experienced September to June, and it's been pretty much like a New England weather schedule. Have the snow, bit of rain. It's, yeah, definitely New England weather.
Yeah, I looked on the, if you take a look at the globe, it's actually about at the same level as New England would be. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
Well, welcome back to the hottest summer in recorded history in the United States there, Michelle. You did well.
Oh, thanks. And doing well for an English person.
Yeah, exactly. It's been raining like heck over there, so you're better off in New England.
Oh, yeah.
Well, a couple of housekeeping things. Really bad ads for Friday. You're going to win one of the coveted Horse Radio Network baseball hats. So I know some of you have won those before, but they're probably wearing out. You need a new one at this point. So, or you can give them as Christmas gifts. But get your ads in to Jennifer at Horse Radio Network. We'll be doing that tomorrow when Jamie's back. And also on Jamie, her horse the other night, and I know some of you follow her on Facebook and saw that this happened, that we did a show together on Monday, and she was supposed to go Tuesday to cross country school her horse because she's moving up to training level this weekend at a show. And she apparently Jet went out that night and the night before she was going to do the cross country training and ran around like a nut, and she heard a crack and he came up three-legged lame. She took him to the vet. They did x-rays and ultrasounds and all that stuff, and they couldn't find anything wrong. So she had a corrective shoe put on, and the last we know is he was still semi-lame yesterday, but she was hoping for the best. She was hoping he'd just, you know, done a tendon just pulled something and was going to be fine by the weekend. But it's iffy about whether he's going to be going this weekend, and she's tending to all of that today. So we're hoping the best for her and Jet, and that they actually get to go to the show. But I can tell you that Jamie will not take this horse to the show unless the horse is 110%. She just won't do it.
Yeah,
and she was nervous about this one anyway, Jennifer. I mean, she this is her first training level, right?
Yes.
With this horse? Yeah. So I know she was nervous about it anyway, and so this is just going to add to her stress, I'm sure.
Well, maybe decrease her stress.
What's that?
Maybe decrease her stress, because if she's not going to go, then she can just relax.
Well, yeah, she's not going at all. But right now, I guarantee you today about whether she's going or not, she's definitely stressed.
That's way worse, not knowing.
Yeah.
I would much rather have, it doesn't matter how nervous I am about a competition, yes or no is what I need to have, not maybe. That would just, I'd be a melted puddle of nerves on the floor.
Yep.
That is awful. We're going to tell you, and I have a sound from this story. But in a minute, we're going to chat with Rochelle a little bit here first. But in a minute, I'm going to tell you about an Australian long rider by the name of Tim Cope, who did something that nobody has done in modern times. And it involves horses, and it involves being absolutely nuts, in my opinion. But Rochelle was drooling. I put this story in there just for you because you're an adventure hound. And we're going to hear about that in a minute. But first, tell us, you know, you've gone to world championships in the driving world. You've been a groom for some of the top drivers. And in your case, you were taking care of four horses, not just one, like the horses. Most of the horses going to the Olympics, or, you know, most of the riders going to the Olympics just have one horse. So you were actually going over there with four-in-hand driving teams and taking care of four horses and packing for four. But you've been to major competitions, not Olympics, but major competitions. How much pressure is there on the groom?
I would say there's quite a bit of pressure. I think mainly people put pressure on themselves, because once you get over there, if you're missing anything, it's your fault. You packed the truck. But luckily, everyone is pretty experienced. No one really goes that hasn't already groomed at major competitions, so they know how to pack everything. They know what they need, and all they're doing now is paring it down. It's very expensive to take equipment, and, you know, everything we have is so heavy. So everyone's just paring down their list. I'm sure they're all having a great time washing, cleaning, buying extra tape, extra this, extra that. But, yeah, I'm sure they're a little nervous right now.
Now, what's it do a lot of the riders or drivers in your case, do any of them go back and double check what's been packed into the trunks to be shipped, or do they trust their groom to do that? They don't bother.
Probably most people trust their grooms to do it, but many people are very hands-on and they like to know what's in there. But because the groom tends to do it mostly, or the whoever the stable manager is, whoever's in charge, the head groom would do it on a weekly basis anyway when they're going to shows. Normally, leave it up to that person to then repack everything because they know, and also they're good at packing. They know where everything goes and get everything into a small space, which is also important.
Now, there was an interesting article actually on Horse Junkies United today about one of the grooms for one of the Canadian riders up there and what she's going through, which is what led me to want to ask you about some of this stuff. And they have the coolest trunks, the Canadian team does. They're these big, tall trunks. They're metal and they're on wheels and they have space in the inside for everything. So when you went overseas or to a show, what have you forgotten? What's been the worst thing you've forgotten that you went, oh, my God, when you got there?
Oh, haven't been too bad on forgetting, but once we were at a local show and we forgot the bridles. That was good.
That happened more than you think, by the way.
Yeah, but luckily for us, because it's driving, we have our best harness and our working harness, and so we use the working harness bridles. We forgot the best bridles, so that wasn't funny. And it only takes that to happen a couple of times. You forget something at home, you start writing lists. Lists are good. Big list, sellotape it to the trunk. Everybody knows.
Yep, that's true. We used to tape our lists to the trunk, too. One of the most forgotten things from when we used to do our mobile unit at shows is girths. People forget their girths. And I don't know why girths are one of the most forgotten things. But, Jennifer, wouldn't you say that had to be the top of the list as far as tack?
If we are to use experience selling tack and supplies at horse shows, girth is the thing that people come racing in and have to buy most frequently. It's by far girths. Yeah.
That's incredible.
And that's not a cheap item to forget.
No.
I mean, you're going to spend $80 to $100 for your new girth. But then you'll have an extra. Maybe you won't forget it next time. So
yeah.
That's something.
I have to say, Glenn, that for the driving people especially, we have been at shows. I was once at a show in England, and there was a runaway horse, and they ran over our tent, which happened to have our carriage in it. And somebody
hit
his carriage. So that was nice. Driving people will lend you anything. They're really nice. They'll lend you reins. Actually, reins is a big one. That's a pretty important one because ours are kind of separate from our bridles and not kept on our bridles, and they're pretty unique to each individual. So reins would be bad.
Now, when they get over there and in the preparations leading up to it, are they just so busy they don't have time to think? Or are the grooms, they're used to, in most cases with these top-level grooms, they're used to grooming 10, 20 horses in the barn, and then you get over there, and all of a sudden you've got to take care of one. Is that easier? I mean, I assume it's easier.
Ooh, I got to say yes and no. No, because the pressure's on, so you're constantly babying that horse. You're in every 5 minutes. You skip out every poop, checking the water buckets. You're changing the water buckets. You're making sure he's got hay, taking him for a walk. You're cleaning the tack. So in a way, no, because you have moments of when your times are and the prep time you need. So you're running around for that time. And then sometimes there's downtime, but not enough downtime to go do something. Maybe you get to look at the show, come back for an hour, something like that. But, yeah, in general, it's not really that more relaxing because it's a little bit higher pressure.
And then in your case, I mean, when you were taking care of four horses or five, right? They would bring five for a four.
They would take five.
Four
mostly
horse
I
pitch.
Did pairs, though, so three horses over there. Sometimes we took four, but, yep.
So that just adds to the pressure.
Yeah, it does. And also you're worrying about the horse that's left in the stable at the time. So you're off with one horse, and sometimes the one that gets left behind is a horse that really doesn't like to be left behind. So now you're constantly worrying because there's no one checking on your horse that's back at the barn, your spare horse or whichever horse you have. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I never thought of that. But yeah,
yeah.
If you take a pair and you actually bring three horses with you, unlike at home, The spare horse stays in the barn. He stays there with all his pals and the rest of the barn staff. But when you're at a competition like this, he's just standing there waiting to self-destruct all by himself.
Exactly. And I've seen some scary things happen, actually, with those horses that are on their own. And sometimes when you're at home, they don't have a problem. They're happy to stay on their own. You can leave them in the barn all day. But get to a show when everything's different and, you know, their personalities change, they're very nervous, and, you know, things can happen. And those stabling that they have, some of the stabling is scary. It's very scary.
Now, you were down. We got to spend some time together at the Kentucky Horse Park not too long ago. That was a big show for you.
That was. Yeah, that was great fun. That was a...
I'm trying to remember which one it was. What was it, Rochelle?
We did two in a row. We did our national championships were there, and it was a prep for the WEG also. And then I saw
That's
you
right.
at the WEG as well, and then we played at the WEG.
That's right. It was so much fun because I got to go out with Rochelle, who has ridden on the back. She has done the scary job on the back of the carriages on marathon day where that person is, you know, jumping around like a monkey. That Rochelle has done that job.
Yep.
Yeah. And you mean they're not called the monkey? I had that wrong.
No, they're called the gator, though. That's kind of the American word for it. Yeah, like navigator. So they call them the gator. The gator.
That's a serious job. If anybody's ever seen that, you know, in a really top-level competition where you're doing marathons through those obstacles, that's a serious job. You can get hurt doing that job.
Yeah, you can. It is a serious job. Yeah. Kudos to people that do that, too. Yeah.
Now, I don't understand how, when they're going through those gates, and for those that don't know, when the marathon, they have a series of obstacles just similar, you know, to the jumps on a cross-country course for the eventers, but much more complicated because they'll have four, five, six gates in each of the obstacles?
Yeah, it goes up to S. So however many number that is, yeah. You can't count how many numbers that is. It goes up to S.
But
at the higher levels,
so
you have an S gate.
Oh, they're so confusing. It's in and out and around and in and out and around. And then if you miss one, you have to know the alternate. I could not do it. I couldn't get through one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great memory game. It really is. And considering we have quite a few people that take up driving at an old age, that's fun too. So everyone uses that as an excuse. You know, they had a senior moment, this and that. So it's good fun standing on the side listening to people. And normally it's the groom in the back or the navigator yelling, left, left, I said left, and the driver going right. And so it is fun. It's a great fun sport to watch if you get a chance.
Now, so the gator is also in charge of directions in the obstacles?
Yeah. I mean, strictly speaking, the onus is always on the driver. They, you know, and the navigator is there for backup. But what happens is the navigator always goes with the driver to look at the hazards to begin with, check out the route. Often there's changes. The driver often goes on their own and then comes back an hour before you're about to set off a marathon and says, oh, by the way, I've decided to go a different way to B. And so that can be a little bit scary. So the navigator definitely needs to know that hazard inside and out and know all the alternates. And then, of course, you have all your friends that try and psych you out by saying, oh, you know, there's an easy way to get to B and C. And you think, really, did I miss that? So it's good fun, good humored fun, obviously, yes.
It is one of the most exciting things you can watch is the carriages, especially four in hand, going through a marathon course. It is just one of the coolest things. Jennifer and I just love that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've done it. You've been there and seen the big boys do it. And we live right next to now one of the biggest competitors, one of the best competitors in the world. He's over in Europe competing right now. And so, you know, we're gonna hopefully get out to Live Oak here in the spring for the big show down here in Florida in the spring.
Yeah, you're talking of Chester. Yeah, he just won his dressage.
Yep.
I think he got a 30-something. He did an amazing score. Yep. And that's great because the Europeans are pretty tough competitors. So we're very happy and very proud of him.
That's Chester Weber we're talking about.
Yeah, Chester Weber. Sorry. Yep.
Well, let's talk about this Australian long rider by the name of Tim Cope and what he did And I'm going to play a sound file for you that's going to tell you about the journey and the movie they made about this. And keep in mind, and they don't really talk about this a whole lot in this audio I'm going to play for you, he actually had to do all the filming himself because he did this trip himself. So he actually filmed the movie in addition to trying to do this amazing ride of 6,000 miles. He's the first one that has been known in modern history to have made this trip by horseback. And what he did is he tracked the Genghis Khan's track, basically, through Mongolia all the way through several countries to Hungary, through the steppes, through the nomad regions and all of that. And the thing they mentioned in the beginning here, and it talks a great deal about in the article, is he knew nothing about horses before he did this. He had ridden a horse once when he was a child. It threw him. He broke his arm, and he decided he was never going to ride a horse again. And then when he decided to make this trip, which is an arduous trip, he went to what's called the Long Riders Guild for advice, and he got experienced advice from long riders all over the world, and planned this trip. He planned to do it in 18 months, and it took him 3 years to do this trip. So let's listen to this audio. You're going to drool because, Rochelle, you're one of the bravest, most adventurous people I've ever met. You would love this, I think. This would be your kind of thing.
I'm extremely jealous right now, very jealous. This is definitely something I would like to do at some point in my life. Yep, definitely.
Well, let's listen to about long rider Tim Cope from Australia.
When I was 20 years old, my friend Chris and I were actually riding bicycles across Siberia. And all of a sudden one day while we were bogged down in the Gobi Sands, these amazing wild horsemen came galloping from over the horizon. They headed off to places that our bikes would never have gone. These people had a world without boundaries, and the freedom to travel wherever they pleased. I was spellbound by the notion that from here in Mongolia stretched 10,000 kilometres of fence-free land to Hungary, and that for thousands of years mounted nomads had crossed this vast space. When the Soviet Union collapsed, what had been out of bounds for so long was now open, and I had a chance to discover whether the nomad spirit still does exist among the scattered nations of Eurasia. Could I become a nomad and re-ride the journey of the mounted warrior?
Got about 10,000 k's to go now. Got to find the horse.
The only problem was I couldn't ride a horse.
When Tim set out alone, there was no certainty, no backup from a camera crew, no guns to deal with wolves or thieves, no escape route.
It's a really, really heavy storm. I'm afraid that there may be some kind of flash flooding.
Survival for him and his animals was constantly at stake. Ahead of Tim lay windswept, wolf-infested plateaus, the glaciated Altai Mountains, minus 50 degree temperatures on the starving steppe.
But it's just bloody hard. Your fingers just get totally frozen tying up the saddles, and the tent's just covered in rime and frost.
Scorching heat in the Kazakh desert.
In the summer, they have what they call the 40 days of above 40.
Corrupt bureaucracy on borders. Violent clashes between sedentary and nomadic societies. And the deep forests and treacherous peaks of the Carpathians. He planned for 18 months and took 3 years to ride across the Eurasian steppe, through the fence-free lands of Mongolia, Kazakhstan, Kalmykia, southern Russia, Crimea, Ukraine, and Hungary. These are diverse nomadic nations linked by the sacred role of the horse. Tim's original dream was quickly brought down to reality when his horses were stolen in the night.
Come back!
But the extreme challenges he was to face gave him empathy and insight into the nomadic way of life. As he wisened each step of the way, locals began to greet him as a folk hero whose journey embodied their national heritage. Their ancestors also made epic journeys from the Central Asian steppes to their current homelands. Hundreds of families welcomed Tim with his horses and fearless dog, Tegan, and treated them with traditional nomad hospitality and taught Tim the way of the steppe.
I had to get used to eating meat, breakfast, lunch and dinner. This is what you call a camel in the lounge room. A hell of a lot of meat.
Tim learned that the only way to handle the wilderness was to think and act as a nomad. Eventually, he realized he had become one. By the time Tim arrived on the Danube, he'd become a celebrity, welcomed by diplomats and world media. Tim had achieved the first known crossing of the steppe in modern times. He had learned from the nomads the challenge of the future for them, like for us, is to balance traditional knowledge of the land with the aspirations and needs of a fast-changing modern world.
Jennifer is going to post a link to that article and the video. You have to watch the video. What this guy went through was unbelievable. And the film is actually called On the Trail of Genghis Khan. And it's not been released over here yet. It's been to film festivals and apparently is winning all kinds of awards all over the world, including in Bulgaria, Canada, Slovenia, and Slovakia. Austria, and what they're going to do is they're opening it at a film festival in New Zealand and Australia beginning July 6th through the 11th, and I think that we'll have it available over here at some point in the future. It just it looks treacherous, and I couldn't do it. You could probably do it. I couldn't do it, Michelle.
I wish I could do it. I hope I could do it someday. It looks amazing. I wonder, where did he learn his veterinary care if he didn't have any horse experience? I was watching the video, and he was basically hacking some ice out of a snowball on his horse's foot. So I'm wondering, you know, where he learned everything.
Maybe as he went along, I don't know. And I'm sure that he got some help from the guild. It sounded like the Long Riders Guild was involved all the way. But he had his horses stolen one night and had to find new horses. I mean, he just talk about a scary adventure at times. I'm sure there's, you know, lots more that this little clip didn't say. But he had some extreme temperatures from desert to minus, you know, 30 degrees.
That's incredible.
I know. It just shows you what one person can do if they set their mind to it. I couldn't be that person. I admit, I'm a wimp. I could not do it. I'll leave it to you, Rochelle. You can take that and go with it.
Yeah,
we're
going to
take
that.
Yeah, you plan that one out for okay. After you graduate from vet school, and you'll know how to do the vet care part then.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be okay on that part.
Let's take a break for our commercial today. Back on Track Products is our title sponsor for the day, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about the fires in Colorado and somebody who has some help to offer. Listeners have been asking why Back on Track products work and what is the science behind them. Well, they have evolved from a combination of ancient Chinese wisdom and modern science, as well as skilled textile production.
This result is a polyester polypropylene fabric with a ceramic powder that's melted into the fabric's very own weave. The ceramic particles reflect body heat as an infrared wave, a form of energy with a highly documented pain-relieving effect. This reflected heat helps to ease inflammation, reduce muscle pain, and increase blood circulation. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your horse's muscles before exercise, thus reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, the product's dual capacity to prevent injury as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries is what makes Back on Track products so unique. I hope that helps as to why their products are so effective. Visit them at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com. Well, that's backontrackproducts.com. We can thank them for their continued support of Horses in the Morning. Well, Rochelle, obviously we have a serious situation going on in Colorado. We talked a little bit about it on Tuesday's show. And as a result of that, I was put in contact through one of our listeners in Colorado with Juliana of the Colorado Horse Food Bank. First of all, I didn't even know there was a Colorado Horse Food Bank, and I'm sure that most of us don't. But she actually has a lot of hay to give away at this point and to provide to people who have been affected by the fires. And I caught up with her on Tuesday. And again, thank you for our listeners for putting her in contact with us. And I want to play this audio for you that I did the other day just because I think it's important that we try and get the word out to as many as we can that there is help out there for your horses. So let's take a listen. Hi, Juliana, and welcome to the show. I'm so glad you took time out to visit with us this week about a situation that we're all familiar with what's going on in Colorado, but I don't think any of us truly understands it. And as I said in the intro, you're with the Colorado Horse Care Food Bank. First of all, I didn't even know there was one of those.
Well, thank you for having us, and hopefully this interview will help spread the news.
Now, what are you? What do you guys do?
More about us. We are a horse food bank, and we have been set up to help people in need for feeding their horses so that they can keep them home. It started when the economy crashed, and we saw people and heard people trying to give away their horses and that. And many of them, once you started speaking with them, realized that they needed a food bank because all they needed was some help for a short period of time while they kind of figured some things out. And the need has become greater as the different droughts have hit. When Texas and Oklahoma had and New Mexico had their drought last year, they needed to buy hay, and so they came to neighboring states. And they were willing to pay more than the Coloradoans. I mean, everyone had budgeted what they always budget, and then they were caught surprised when hay was much more expensive. And so that put a lot of horses in jeopardy again because the people thought that they had enough budgeted out for them, but then when something unexpectedly doubled, then they couldn't afford the hay, and they had to kind of regroup. And so we come along and help people out by giving them food hay grants. We buy the hay. We don't give anyone any money. We have our hay contacts, and we buy the hay and, get it to the people. Either they come and get it, or we manage to get it to them.
And is there a cost to the recipient?
No.
So they apply for aid with you, and then you distribute it that way. Now,
yes.
You're a 501c3 nonprofit, I assume? Okay. And now with this latest, obviously with the fires most recently, I know there's been a couple of places set up that people can bring their horses that have been displaced because of the fires. So there's a couple centers set up that way. And I assume that there are families that move to other barns. Do you know the gravity of the situation? Does anybody know at this point in relation to horses?
I don't know the Waldo fires statistics. Where the High Park fire was further along, and so I knew that they had 400 horses and then miscellaneous livestock. that had been displaced, and it was in Larimer County at the ranch, is what they call it. And many of those people are going home now. So many people had donated hay, and they went home with 5 bales per animal. And assuming that would last about 10 days. And then they also sent people home with a list of people they could contact who were donating hay. And some of them were like 20 bales, 100 bales, things like that. And depending on, you know, who calls first, that's how that will be, and then it will be gone. And people have donated various amounts. And I just bought a lot of hay in anticipation that in a month from now, people are going to need this hay. They don't even realize they need it yet. Of course, I'd like them to know sooner rather than later so that we could get the hay distributed or start distributing it, because I have 2 truckloads coming in this weekend, and it would be really nice to be able to unload from one truck to the other truck. And the fire recipients that we would be helping, they need to come up and show us their permit, which shows that they actually are from the fire areas, or the, you know, that they were actually involved in the fire.
So they actually get some kind of form from somebody?
Yes, they get some kind of a permit. I haven't seen it yet. I just know that when I was talking to the sheriff with Larimer County, he's the one who told me about the permit. So that's how the people can identify whether someone is really from the fire district, fire area. We also had somebody suggest, you know, that they had a lot of leftover tack or used tack, and you know, they just kept it around the barn, kind of thinking they would do something with it eventually, and that we should have local drop-off areas. And we have the High Fire, the Fort Collins area, one already to go, and that is at Happy Horse Tack Shop in Fort Collins. And they will take tack, and then people will come in and same thing. They will show us their permit, and then we will give them tack that they need. And some of these people that have been displaced were horse trainers or give lessons, so you know the amount of tack they lost. So that's why I know that the need's going to continue to grow as people get home and they get situated and or they don't have a home to go to, so now they're trying to figure out where their horses and that and other animals are going to go. One person that we've already helped with hay, she had friends, and so she had 80 acres. Totally burned, fences gone, 2 barns gone, you know, trailers, tractor, things like that. Everything gone, except her house is still standing. And she was allowed to go back into her house. It wasn't so badly damaged with smoke. Somehow, you know, she made it through with her house intact. But she's a horse trainer and gives lessons, and so her tack is all gone. She had 5 cows that she put at one friend's house. She put her horses, which she has 5 horses, they went to somebody else's. And then, you know, she had a couple of goats, and one of her cows was calving, and one of the goats, I don't know exactly what you call that, I forgot. Anyway, it was giving birth, and both of the babies didn't make it. And she thinks that it's probably because of the relocation and the trauma and everything that was going on. So, she needed hay because she didn't take hers to Larimer County, and the friends where she took them didn't have the extra hay to give her, because hay in Colorado right now is really ridiculously overpriced.
Of Colorado being in a drought or a dry state. You know, when you think of Colorado, you're from the east or wherever, you're thinking of lush, you know, you're not thinking of dry.
No, it's very dry. You walk out in my pasture, and it crunches under your feet. So you live with the fear of fire every moment of every day.
Well, let's tell people how they can get help. If you're in the Colorado area and you've been affected by the fires, or you know somebody that has, what do they do?
They can contact us at our phone, 303-670-1474, or by email, which is Julianne, which is on our website, and our website is www.horsefoodbank.org.
What a generous woman to take time and effort to put this together when the drought was on, and now with the fires, you know, she's putting, guarantee you, she's putting some of her own money into making this all work. She is an amazing woman, and we appreciate everything that she's doing trying to get the word out. It's horsefoodbank.org. Horsefoodbank.org if you're in the Colorado area. Isn't that neat?
That is. It's really nice that people do practical things like that. Amazing.
Well, we have a couple of news stories here before we go on with the show that we wanted to chat about. And we got this link from Mel, our listener in Australia, and then I got it from a couple other people too. We do, Rochelle, a lot of horse rescue stories here on the morning show, and we try, and now there's so many, we try and only do ones that are a little bit different. Well, the one you're going to talk about now is a little bit different because this horse actually fell into an abandoned mine shaft, and we haven't had one of those before.
Yeah, this one's amazing. I can't believe this story. So it turns out this the owner was riding the horse. He was just out with friends. They were doing a endurance ride. They were training for endurance ride. So obviously they were on trails that they knew, having a great day. And then all of a sudden the horse slipped down an abandoned mine shaft. It went down about 5 meters, which is pretty far down, actually. I'm not sure how the rider managed to get off in time. But he landed on his side. And it was pretty cold and dark down there. So he's 5 meters down. So they had to call, and on the top of this mountain, so they called out the fire brigade and everyone else, and it took about 6 hours. But they did finally pull this poor horse up. He's about 10 years old. They've had him his entire life, so he's obviously a member of the family. And they were pretty scared about it, I think, because he was so cold, he was becoming a little hypothermic. So they were worried he wasn't going to make it. But it did. They pulled him up. Took some time with him, and then he got up on his own feet and walked down the mountain. Amazing.
And at the bottom of the mine shaft, too, there was nothing but water. So this horse was in water, cold water. It's winter down there this whole time. This was in Australia, and it's just cold. I mean, and it was in there for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Amazing. They said it took 45 minutes after the horse got out, just laying there with blankets and stuff over it before it got up and started walking. Oh, amazing.
It is amazing.
That tech took some dedication for the firefighters, too, to get down there in that cold water and try and get the straps around.
I know how brave they are. And also, it's dangerous with horses. You know, each end can knock you out. You've got the front feet, the back feet, and the head throwing around. So unless they're specifically trained in rescuing horses, it can be really tricky. You've got to put those straps in the right places so you don't do any more damage.
Yeah, well, we're glad that he's out and okay. Hopefully he'll be doing endurance again at some point soon. I think he's going to have a little bit of recovery time first. Probably a lot of carrots and apples in the meantime.
Exactly. Hopefully he's sitting in his stall right now or out in the field eating a big bucket of carrots.
Well, there's another name that you probably have not heard before. A lot of our listeners have, because we have a lot of listeners that are in the driven racing community, in the harness racing world. And you're going to recognize this name because you're familiar with it. But if you don't follow harness racing, this is going to be a new name for you. But he is going down in the record books. And his name is Dave Pallone. And Dave Pallone is about to set a record. And the record he's about to set is for the most wins in the driving world. Now, he is 50 years old and has, get this, 15,179 victories in his 30-year career. 15,000 victories. The next one will tie him with the sport's greatest driver ever, Herb, I think it's Fillion. And Herb had 15,180. And so he needs to get two more wins to break Herb's record. And apparently he's going to try that at the Meadow Racetrack and Casino in Washington, Pennsylvania today. Will be the day he tries that. And Herb is actually heading out to the racetrack to watch him do it. So Herb is still around and is the legend in the driving world as a jockey. Now, Pallone was actually inducted 2 years ago to the Harness Hall of Fame. So he has already been in the Harness Hall of Fame. And he said this, he's kind of a humble guy. He said, "I was actually thinking about it last night. I think I'm going to have mixed emotions. about setting the record. When I was a kid, Herve was my idol. In soccer, there's Pele. In harness racing, there's Herve. When you say Herve, everyone knows who you're talking about. You don't need his last name. So here he is about to take the record from his idol. And let me give you an idea, Rochelle and the listeners, what this means, 15,000. If you took one victory for every day of Dave Pallone's life, from the time he was 8 years old, every day one victory from 8 years old, and added them up, it would be equal to the number of wins he's racked up in his career at this point. That for
what?
Every day. I know. It's 15,179 days, basically, from the time he was 8 years old. Just an amazing record to have.
Wow. Is there any other sport in the world where you can have that many wins? That's incredible.
No, because thoroughbred racing, actually, the all-time winningest jockey, his name was Russell Blaze, and he had about 11,000, so he was 4,000 fewer than Pallone. So it is just an amazing feat that he is able to do this. I'm saying amazing a lot today because there's just a lot of amazing news today.
It's a good amazing day. It is.
It's an amazing day. That's right. The day after the 4th, we all survived. Well, one of the other amazing things we talk about all the time is Equity Manufacturing. And Equity is the place that you go for the best manure forks out there. And, you know, everybody says, you know, manure fork's a manure fork. It is not. When you take a look at the Equity forks, and you can find them at equitymfg.com, these things are just amazing. They are different. They re-engineered the manure fork. Now, they cost a little bit more than you're going to pay for the cheapies you buy at the store, but they're worth it. Believe me, they are worth it. They have what's called the Flexen fork and the Shaken fork. We use both here at the farm. The Flexen fork is just a terrific fork, and one of our listeners by the name of Aubrey actually has the Flexen fork, and she posted this morning. It was ironic that she did that. She didn't know this commercial was coming out today. She said, I thought of you guys, and I thought you would get a kick out of this. I had another barn. She does many barns. She actually goes around to several barns a day doing barn chores and barn work. She's a busy girl. And she said, I had another barn to do in the afternoon yesterday and came down to leave while the gal that does my place a couple of times a week was still there cleaning the stalls. She was very angry with me when I went to take my Flexen fork from her to go out to the other place. Gotta love the traveling pitchfork. And Aubrey, she has been on the show before. She just loves this thing. The Flexen fork is wonderful. And the one thing it avoids is something that those of us that clean around areas that have roots and stuff like that, if you're picking up the manure outside or grass, heavy grass, is something Aubrey termed flicking. And you know what that is, don't you, Rochelle? Flicking.
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst thing because, you know, you go in to clean the stall and you flick it and it goes against the wall, or worse yet, it comes right up in your face. That's the worst. So the Flexen Forks doesn't do that because it actually has a kind of a built-in shock absorber system. It has a suspension system like a car built right into the Flexen Fork, and it just doesn't do it. So these are amazing things that you need to take a look at them. I don't care if you even need a manure fork right now. Go buy one anyway. This will be the only one that you use. It's true for Helena. It's true for Jamie. It's true for us. It's true for Aubrey, who cleans five different barns a day. The Flexen fork's the only one you'll ever use. And if you clean a lot of stalls that have shavings or sawdust, check out the Shaken fork. It does all the shaking for you. It's automated. It's got a power pack built into it, and it will do all the shaking for you. You'll save bedding and you'll save time with the Shaken fork if you clean a lot of stalls every day. That's equitymfg.com. Well, this is the point of the day where we take a break. Today we're taking a break for Templeton Thompson and her song, When I Get Where I'm Going. And when we come back, Rochelle, Jennifer has a challenge for us. She has challenged us to some equestrian Olympic trivia. So I hope you know something about equestrian Olympics, because I don't, and I'm counting on you.
Uh-oh. We could be in trouble, Glenn.
I might have to Google some of this. All right, we'll be back.
Right now,
Well, that's When I Get Where I'm Going by Templeton Thompson. You can find all of her music at templetonthompson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with our adopted vet student, Rochelle, who's filling in for Jamie today. Jamie will be back tomorrow. And also Coach Jen over there in the producer chair. And today's show is sponsored by Back on Track Products at backontrackproducts.com. Well, the Horse Radio Network show highlight today is the Eventing Radio Show. And it's going to be coming out in a couple of hours this afternoon. The new show will be coming out. They had some interesting interviews there, and one of them was with Boyd Martin. And Boyd, of course, has qualified for the United States Olympic team, former Aussie himself. And I could see him doing the ride across the steps. I could see him doing it. But Boyd qualified with his horse Otis, and they had a chance, John and Samantha did from the Eventing Radio Show, had a chance to catch up with him after his run of three horses at Barbary. And I have that interview here for you right now to give you a little preview of what's coming up on the Eventing Radio Show. So this is Boyd Martin after, I think he was waiting for the award ceremony to begin at Barbary. So this is before the announcement was made that he had officially made the team.
Boyd was just waiting for the prize giving here at Barbary. You finished up really well, but it's been a day of ups and downs for you with your three.
Well, that's the beautiful thing with having three horses. You know, if you come in with one, it's either really good or really bad. Unfortunately, my most seasoned horse was first on today, and we had a good round except for about a third of the way around. We clipped a leg at the Rhino water jump, and I went flying through the air and looked up at the nice sky.
That's why it happened, because it's a hippo, not a rhino, Boyd.
whatever it was, I definitely got the fence wrong, and unfortunately, my day didn't start off the best of ways, you know.
So Otis then and Remington did well for you, though, today. Two nice clears.
Yeah, both those boys are good horses, and both very, very different to ride. Otis is a big, scopey jumper that's powerful and eats up the ground, and then little Remington's like a little bunny rabbit, sort of scoots around, and so with the Otis ride, I sort of was trying to hold him back and settle him, and Remington I was trying to kick on and cut a few strides out here and there.
Now, of course, you're all over here in the UK at the moment thinking about the Olympic Games, and you've got three horses here at Barbary this weekend. What's the match practice been like since you've been over here? Obviously, you're with Philip, and you've got a great relationship. Some of the other guys have been trained by Philip, too. Is that all sort of helping that you've got that little sort of Dutton team, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, Philip's been a role model, a father figure or coach or whatever you want to call it in there. He guided me through my first US team experience in 2010, and you know, I think he's really guided a number of us with our fitness program, our riding, our course walks here, and he's a wonderful competitor, but more importantly, he's a very unselfish person that was definitely trying to help the younger guys out, like myself and Coleman and Clark and stuff like that. And he's a very, you know, he's just a wonderful guy, and I think we're all very, very lucky to have someone like that helping us along.
Alongside the three-star here at Barbara, you've got the four-star Olympic dressage test. Now, it's quite intense because it's only 4.5 or so minutes long, and it has a lot of collection in it as well.
I took the time with my dressage coach, Michael Berestone, that came over from America, and we watched the test and analysed it, and I think it will suit Otis more. It's got no rein back, and it's got no walk pirouettes, which are two worst movements, so... I got to say, I think it's got a little bit more flow than the one we did at Kentucky this year. And I think it suits me a bit better, a bit less to remember, actually.
You're over here into quite a high-pressure selection situation, but you've had enormous interest since the true prospect fire, and NBC have just really switched on to you in the last 6 or 8 weeks or so. So in a way, it must be quite nice to be over here slightly away from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're dead right. You know, it's just your normal lifestyle in America. There's 35 horses in work. You've got the pressures of teaching. You've got horse sales going on. You've got all different things sort of grabbing and pulling you in all different directions. And I've got to say, when you're in this sort of situation where you're taken away and just told to focus on a couple of horses, you do find that your riding gets better and your focus gets better. So I think it's a good thing for me, just because I try and do everything at once and outside this sort of time.
I think, you know, if you guys like you got 35 horses in the barn, you're probably quite lucky to have three over here rather than just one that gets all your concentration every day.
It's a little bit unsettling. All the guys on the team, on the squad here, are used to being flat out riding and teaching all day, and, it's hard to stretch it out. I'm lucky, you do three horses and you take them for a nice long walk and you do a cup of coffee between each one. You can drag it out to three quarters of the day, but it's pressure, and you start pacing around a little bit, wondering and looking for things to do. But I've been running with the guys. We're living in a house together: Philip, Clark, Will, and Fordry. And we're playing a game of tennis in the afternoon, or going for a run, and trying to stay out of the pub before 6 o'clock. So it's one of those things.
And what's the American timetable from here today, Sunday at Barbary, on to the announcement?
Well, the brutal vet check is tomorrow, Monday. So we've got a crew of veterinarians, checking over every inch of the horses. And then I think all the American selectors are here in Barbary, and they went out to the site yesterday at Greenwich Park and analysed the terrain and the course. And so they got that in the back of their mind to consider which horses suit the terrain. And it's a tough thing. I truly am against this selection once we're over here. I think they should have selected the team when we're in America, just because you're with a group of your friends, but you're also battling to get on a team. So we'll see what happens.
Boydo, thank you and best of luck.
Good on you, mate.
And that was Boyd Martin of the United States eventing team over there to ride Otis in the Olympics. And we're looking forward to following his progress as we go along here. So we're going to get to our equestrian Olympic trivia here, Rochelle. But before we do that, I got to ask you a question I've been meaning to ask you, is what do you hope to do when you're finally done with vet school over there in Slovakia? Will you be able to practice here in the United States? Will you stay in Europe? And what kind of vet stuff do you want to do?
Definitely horses. Sports medicine is definitely high on my list. Podiatry, anything to do with the feet and lameness, very interested in that. But unfortunately, I got involved in the falconry club at school, and now I kind of have a taste for birds. So I've been playing with a hawk over there, so interested in that too. And also the aquarium stuff. I volunteer at the aquarium, so I love doing that as well. And that's the great thing about veterinary medicine, though. You can do anything. It really is a diverse career.
Now, will you stay in Europe, or will you be able to bring your vet certificate over here and practice? How does that work?
Yeah, I'm qualified for all of Europe. But for the American part, I do have to take the boards here, and then I also have to do a clinical part as well. So I'm basically taking additional tests. So just to make sure that my clinical skills are up to scratch. But other than that, shouldn't be a problem. I'd like to come over and keep working.
You'd like to be back to the United States?
Yeah, I'd like to do both, to be honest. It sounds a little greedy, but I would like to be able to go to both places. I know when we would go to competitions, we did have veterinarians that came here and also came with us over to Europe. So that would be something fun to do. But that's way in the future, way in the future.
All right, very good. Well, we wish you the best of luck. How did the first year go? Did you do okay?
It was great. Yeah, the first semester was a little dodgy. You know, I was in a new place. It's definitely unusual.
New language.
Wasn't sure. Yeah, exactly. That as well. So, but the second semester was 100% better. And now, to be perfectly honest, I mean, I'm sitting here with nothing to do, waiting to get back to school. So I can't wait to get back. I'm kind of excited. It's going to be a tough year, though. I hear second year's tough.
How much Slavic did you learn?
Ooh, just a little. Enough to get by. Enough to order meal and say thank you and please. And in Slovakia, when someone says hello to you, they actually say ahoy. So that was funny, saying ahoy to everyone on the street. Felt like a sailor.
Oh, that's kind of funny. Yeah, I didn't realize that. How do you say goodbye or thank you?
Goodbye is dovidenia. And which is funny. Dovidenia. It's kind of like the Russian language. But you can shorten that to dovi. And then thank you is jakuyam. I might not be pronouncing that completely correctly because a lot of the times they laugh at us when we try and say things in Slovak. But we do try. So I think it's more of a jakuyam. Got to add a little accent there. Works a bit better.
All right. Is it still using our alphabet? And I know that sounds funny, but there are languages that don't. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, no, it is. Is that, the Latin alphabet or the Greek alphabet? I don't know. Latin, I guess. But they just have extra umlauts and things like that and these squiggly little lines all over the place. So those change the CH is an interesting one. The CH is a ch sound. It's a little different than our CH. So other than that, it's pretty much the same.
So you bring your English-American accent to Slovakia to try and speak Slovak?
Yeah, I try. It doesn't work out all that well. But, yeah, we certainly try. Yeah, there is actually another American over in school, too. So we have good fun. Kinda.
So you have somebody to talk to?
I do, yep, yep. He's a New Yorker. So that is fun talking to someone from New York.
That's funny. All right, Jennifer, we are ready. I think we've killed as much time as we can at this point, trying to avoid being made fools of in the Equestrian Olympic Trivia Challenge that Jennifer has thrown down to us, Rochelle. So yeah. I guess we're ready.
I feel like we should have, you know, some kind of introductory tutti horns or something. But...
I don't really have tutti horns. How about with this one?
Let's try
Rawhide. This one.
I like that one better. All right. Do you want me to point these questions at a person directly, or is whoever can answer it going to chipe in?
I think Rochelle and I are going to work together to try and see if we can get any of them.
We need to team up on this one, Glenn. Jeez.
I've asked everyone in the Blog Talk chat room to step away from their Google. No cheating.
Oh.
So we'll see if anybody.
I need to open that. I didn't know you were doing that. I need to open that so I can see what the answers are.
No cheating and giving Glenn the answers either.
Can you give me?
All right, here we go. Here we go. The first year for equestrian sports in the modern Olympics was 1900. Where were they held? What country? And the hint is bubble people.
You say
France.
People.
France! Ding, 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 ding.
Paris,
I don't
get the reference.
The last time they had the Olympics in France, the opening ceremonies had all of these weird people in great big plastic bubbles.
Ah, that sounds very French. Yes.
It was.
Yeah. It was a Salvador Dali painting gone bad. It really was.
It was really bad.
Sorry, France, but it was weird.
I'm
too much
that
absent.
Had to get the worst opening ceremonies in the last 100 years since it started. The French one was terrible. I hope Britain does a little better than the French.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really
I think we're having a garden.
Yeah, they're having
a, it looks like they're having a big garden.
It's one of my favorite parts.
Yeah, they're going to have a they're going to do a replica of the English countryside with different animals and that kind of thing. So that should be well, the British countryside. So that should be interesting.
Yeah,
be loose sheep and God knows what running around. So watch out.
Yeah. Perhaps some horses falling into mud pits.
Yeah.
Yep. There'll be a whole bunch of guys off to the side drinking at a pub.
Yeah. Exactly.
Be fish and chips off to the other side. A little fish and chips going on.
And there will be at least one little white pony in a pub.
Oh, there's going to be some Shetland pony jumping or something.
Oh, that's always good.
That's true.
Shetland pony racing.
What part of England did you grow up in?
Didn't really grow up in one part in particular. Born in Norfolk, though, which is a very flat part. Lots of windmills.
Gotcha.
Really?
Hmm.
Huh. Old windmills
see,
or modern?
Modern.
Anyway, next question.
Michelle and Glenn 1, Jennifer 0.
In those 1900 France Olympics, what were the four equestrian disciplines featured? And the hint is, none of them are still featured today.
Oh.
Ooh. Horse racing?
I know.
Polo, ding, 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 ding.
Really?
I was thinking horses jumping off cliffs into buckets of water like they do, or they did do.
Well, I will give you a half a point for that, because they
Yay.
Did have the high jump, and they actually called it the high jump.
Ah, they don't. It's like the puissance they have nowadays in the show jumping?
Perhaps, yes.
The big wall?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So we had polo, we had the high jump.
Long jump.
We had two.
Ding, 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 ding. The
Yay!
Long jump.
What'd they do? Have a little pit with sand?
I'm going to have to go to YouTube and look up the 1900 Olympics. So they had polo, what they called Grand Prix jumping, which was a little bit different than show jumping as we know it today. The high jump and the long jump were the four disciplines featured.
Wow. We're good. We're on a roll.
Yeah, we are. We're doing good here.
2 points.
I was thinking chariot racing just because they used to do that way back in the Greek, you know, Olympic times. But
chariot racing.
Chariot racing, yeah.
Have you ever driven a chariot, Rochelle?
I've never driven a chariot. I've driven like I was in a chariot, but not actually in a chariot, no.
Haven't you always wanted to do that, though? Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, like we have a famous Iceni queen in England, in Norfolk, where I was born, called Boadicea, or Boudica, depends on which literature you read. And she drove a chariot, and she had those nice spikes that stick out the side of the wheels.
Yeah.
So I've always wanted to do a Queen Boadicea kind of reenactment. That would be great.
All right. Us and Ben-Hur. I'll be Ben-Hur,
exactly.
You be Queen Boadicea.
Okie dokie.
Right. I'm ready.
Look out, Halloween parade, here you come.
Yep.
Next question. How many Olympics featured vaulting as an equestrian sport? 1, 3, or 6?
Is this horse vaulting? Or
horse
yes.
vaulting as an equestrian sport?
Not the
in
kind with a long pole. I'm saying 6.
Or,
what do you think?
What were my options? 1, 3, or 6?
Those are your options.
I didn't even know vaulting was an Olympic sport at any point, so I'm going to guess 1.
Glenn gets the point. 1 in 1920.
Well,
that
I know they
it.
Do
one.
A lot of trial. Well, they do a lot of trials on sports where they bring them in one time and see if it's going to go over. So my guess is I didn't even know they had vaulting back in 1920 either.
Wow.
There you go. It was 1920. And next question. This will be fun. Stockholm held the first dressage competition in the modern Olympics in what year?
I don't remember when Stockholm was.
Were we born yet?
Yeah, were we born?
No.
Ooh, okay. Now we're in the 1800s,
then,
eh?
Well, before 1962, Rochelle, that, if that helps, it's before 1962. I was going to guess, like, in the 50s. Can we get within a decade? I was going to guess.
You can get within a decade, yes. I'll give you the point.
I was
going to
guess in the 50s, is my guess. What's yours, Rochelle? I'm saying 50s.
Well, I'm thinking cavalry stuff, too, so. All right. Yeah, let's go with the 50s.
1912.
Oh, really?
Wow.
I have a great description of the dressage test performed. This is awesome.
Okay.
They called it the test on the flat. Maximum of 10 minutes in length and is ridden in what we now call the small arena. It was in a 20 by 40 meters. The required gates included free, easy, slow, and extended. They call it slow.
Slow.
Yeah.
I can do the easy one.
Extra points could be earned if the rider performed the canter work with the both reins in one hand.
Some of it sounds like Western, you know, lope. And you know how they walk, they go around with the one hand up and the reins in one hand?
Yeah. See, the Western dressage thing isn't all that modern after all. Additionally, and I believe this was a completely separate test and a separate score that was combined, dressage horses were required to jump four obstacles in the arena, which were a maximum of 1.1 meters in height.
It defeats
the purpose
jump.
Of dressage, but anyway.
And there's a name for the test, and it escapes me at this particular minute, so maybe our chat room and Facebook.
Oh, yeah, I think of it, was too.
It,
you're right.
Was it the pre-Caprilli test?
That's it. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Pre-Caprilli.
Yeah, and I remember when I got my very first Pony Club manual ever as a teenager, those pre-Caprilli tests were still in it.
That's right. They should bring that back. They should bring that back. That'd
they,
be fun.
They do have it. Where was I? I was on somebody's website that does some dressage competitions that are outside of the USDF parameters, and they do still have pre-Caprilli tests available.
Wow.
Yeah, but everybody'd have to be figuring out what are the criteria for slow. You know? We'd all be going, okay, what exactly is slow? And how slow is slow? You'd have to start over again.
Yeah.
You're right.
Someone there with a timer?
Yeah.
Too fast. Slow it down.
Slow it down.
The Olympics were held in Los Angeles how many times?
At least once.
We know once, but
yeah.
I think two.
Do you think so? Can you do it twice in the same city? Isn't that the whole point of the Olympics?
And I could be absolutely wrong here, but something's sticking in my head, like back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, somewhere in there, they were also held in L.A., but I could be absolutely wrong about that. So, Rochelle, are you saying one?
Yeah, I thought you couldn't do it in the same place twice, or am I completely insane? Well, we know
I
the answer to that.
I think you're wrong about that. But, all right,
final answers?
Yeah.
Two and one.
Okay. The answer is two in 1932 and 1984.
I even got the decade right.
Good job, Batman. Well done.
I don't know why I remember that, but I kind of remembered there was an Olympics back then. And L.A. wasn't the kind of, you know, it wasn't built up mega city like it is now either back at that time.
There
I don't even know if the Hollywood sign was on the hill.
Might not have been.
We're doing good
next
here.
Next question. In 1932, 14 medals were awarded in the equestrian event. In 1984, 16 medals were awarded. In which 1932 or 1984 did the United States Olympic Equestrian Squad earn more medals?
Oh. So the choices were different, though. Remember, it was the jumping and the long jump and the high jump. Is that right?
Actually, in the 1932 Olympics, the three disciplines that we are familiar with today are the same three disciplines.
Aha.
I'm going to take a wild guess and say 32.
I'm going to go opposite, just because I know you guys did well in the Los Angeles one, right? Didn't we do well in the Los Angeles one?
Jennifer will tell us. I'm trying to remember.
I have no idea.
This was a trick question. It was the same five medals.
Oh.
So we're both right.
Yeah. Now, this is a bonus question for Glenn because he needs all the bonuses he can get. He should know this one. There is a road at the Kentucky Horse Park named after one of the horses in the 1932 Olympics that won one of those awards. Which one is it?
Oh, geez.
Is it that road at the back that goes outside? Is it that one?
What's the main road? Nina Bonny? Isn't that the main road that goes down? Was that a racehorse or was that a...
Nina Bonny is the main road, and that was a racehorse, yes.
Oh. Yeah, I thought that was a racehorse. That's the only road I can remember the name of. How many times have I been in a horse park? About 1,000. You too, Rochelle.
Someone got it. I know. I know they're called, this is the road to dressage, this is the road to marathon. That's what I call them.
It's like the road between the stadium and the lake.
Exactly. This is Stadium Road.
Okay, we're lost. I give up.
Jenny Camp Road.
Which road is that?
I believe Jenny Camp, and I'm pretty sure they've renamed it now, was the one that went from the offices across the causeway.
Okay, toward the stadium.
Towards Rolex Stadium. I'm pretty sure that was the Jenny Camp Road that they renamed.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah. I'm going to Google it now.
So what's it called now, Jen?
Well, that's what I'm Googling because I didn't have time to check that.
I'll laugh if it's called Stadium Road.
Or Between the Lake Road.
Lake Road. Yep.
Well, I think we did better than we expected.
I have lots more questions.
All right, let's get us one more, and then we'll have to wrap it up.
Give us one more. This is a great one. This is my favorite one. In 1912, how many days did it take to finish the eventing test? And which phase came first?
Show jumping was first. I'm thinking.
How many days? Well, now it takes four to do a three-day, right? So
let's say, do you think they did show jumping and dressage on the same day, like they do sometimes? What do you think? No, there's too many people.
Oh, you're thinking it was shorter than longer.
Yeah, there'd be way too many people. You're right. It's an Olympic, so. Another trick question from Jen, I'm sure.
I'm going 5 days. I'm going to say that they had 3 days of dressage and then the other two, you know, cross country and stadium. I'm going 5 days, I think.
Are you going shorter? I'm going to go short. I'm going to stick to 3 days. I'm going to go, or maybe two. What should I do? I can't decide.
Glenn gets half credit. It was 5 days.
Wow.
And this is the really awesome part. Day one, endurance. 34 miles.
What?
At a speed of 230 meters per minute. Immediately followed by a 3.5-mile or approximately cross-country course.
Ha!
Day two is a rest day.
Well, no kidding.
Day three, steeplechase, 3.5 miles. Day four, show jumping. Day five, dressage.
Wow.
That
dressage is at the end.
Yeah.
After all of that, your horse was too damn tired. All he did was that slow thing. That's
they should
all
do that way now.
That That's amazing how it's evolved. It was, you know, we took the long, long format, made it into a long format, and now it's a short format. Wow.
Yeah, that's definitely a long, long format. If you've got to ride 34-mile endurance ride before cross-country. Oh, my God. Aubrey, I know you're listening out there. Imagine that, 34 miles before you did to do cross-country. And then you have to do a what was the second one? Steeplechase.
The second phase on day three was steeplechase.
Okay, so
there was no jumping on the first day after that, basically marathon run. It was
the first day one of five was basically a super duper long roads and tracks followed by a cross country.
Oh, so they did do cross country on day one.
Whoa!
And you want to know what? I bet you that they didn't have to worry about dressage much that day. If you get bored by dressage, you don't have to worry about it because we're only three riders left at the end of all of this.
Exactly. To be dropping like flies.
This is my very favorite bit of trivia about Equestrian Olympics that we can end with. And every eventer out there will love this one. In what year did the eventing test have no dressage phase?
I don't know why they would have done it without dressage.
Why would they have done it with a 34-mile road and track? It was the same year they had vaulting.
Oh,
what year was that?
1912 or something? Was that wrong? What was that question? I've already forgotten.
Me too. So what year was it?
Antwerp, Belgium, 1920.
Oh, 1920.
Does it say why they didn't have dressage?
Doesn't say. Because they had vaulting instead.
Yeah, they had vaulting instead, exactly.
Because they couldn't sell any tickets. They just said, oh, heck with it. We're not going to do it.
Boring.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. That was fun. And thank you so much, Rochelle, for filling in for Jamie today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy your summer here before you head back to Slovakia.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you.
We'll be sure to check in with you again when you head back there and find out how it's going over there at vet school. Everybody, don't forget to get your really bad ads in. Send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We'll do those tomorrow. Hopefully, knock on wood here, everything goes well for Jamie today, and she'll be back again tomorrow. But other than that, you can find all of the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. And hear the rest of the Eventing Radio Show, which was our highlight show today. It'll be out a little bit later on in the day, and you can hear a bunch more interviews that John and Samantha did from England. Thank you, Rochelle. Thank you, everybody. Have a terrific day. Thanks, Jennifer.
Bye. Thanks, Glenn. Bye.
And as Jamie would say, stay neuter and geld. No, that wasn't it, was it? Stay, I forget.